This is WLRN Connects, a new program that will be on air Mondays. We're also streaming live during the 9 a.m. hour on the WLRN Facebook page. I'm Wilkin Brutus.
Hello, Wilkin. I'm Tom Hudson. The idea of this program is to host a virtual gathering spot for our audience across South Florida. You know, Wilkin, this pandemic has led to a lot of isolation to protect public health, certainly, and it's also caused a lot of economic anxieties.
Yeah, and for 2 weeks, protests sparked by George Floyd dying under the knee of a Minneapolis police officer have swept across South Florida and across the country. Generations of racism and police brutality and social justice have been central to the marches. Today, we want to hear how you are handling anxiety amid the pandemic and the historic mental health issues brought forth by the protests for social justice.
Yeah, there's just been a lot going on over the last several months. That is almost minimizing everything that's been going on in people's lives and in the headlines, certainly. And we'd like to hear your story. Share your story with us here live on the 9 a.m. hour, 800-743-9576. 800-743-WLRN. What worries do you have? How are you dealing with the stress of brought on by the pandemic, staying at home, wearing masks, social distancing, staying apart, or even the difficulties of losing work and still having to pay bills? 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. You could also join us. We're streaming live right now in the 9 a.m. hour on the WLRN Facebook page.
Yeah, and to Tom's point, the anxiety in the air is mixed with people stuck in their homes for months during a pandemic, high unemployment, closed businesses, isolation, an endless flood of polarizing racial and political stories. And now, here in South Florida, the beginning of hurricane season. Carrie Cuellar is a middle school nurse in Hialeah. How are you, Carrie?
I'm great. Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Good morning. Good morning. All is well. What were the early days of the pandemic like as a school nurse?
Well, the thing is that there's been a lot of uncertainty when it comes to the COVID-19 virus. So I'm used to seeing children with flu symptoms, you know, fever, coughing. So I did start to see that, but I didn't know how serious this was. But I did see a large cooperation of parents coming to pick up the students. So I was like, okay, this is something. Something is really there. I was starting to get a lot of the teachers were, of course, as justified, a little bit nervous. They would send kids as soon as they noticed, a cough or potential fever. So, yeah, it was very concerning at the beginning.
And obviously the concern continues. Are you thinking about how you're going to adjust to a return of school in the fall?
Well, the thing is my role has completely changed since we've been out of school. I'm actually helping my organization bridge gap of care with our adult patients. And that was honestly one of my questions to my program director. What is school nursing going to look like for us? Because really, we are the first responders on the school site. So there's still some uncertainty with that. I know our superintendent, he's going to make the best decisions possible for the benefit and the safety of our students and our staff and our teachers. So I'm wondering, too, what is it going to look like in the future?
Just in terms of adjusting to virtual, being a virtual school nurse, what does that look like?
Well, honestly, we have some programs within the agency that have been using telemedicine already. We haven't been so much so. Our social workers have been keeping up with these families and these students and checking in on them and giving them available resources. So telemedicine could be as simple as a phone call. I know because we weren't ready for this, in the future, there are grants and programs available where we will be able to continue to provide nursing services to our students. But my role completely changed from elementary to middle school to now is really helping adults and just checking in on them with a simple phone call. How are you doing?
So there's this sort of mental health aspect to it, too, right?
Oh, absolutely. I'm very concerned about my students that really relied on the services that we provided, including our mental health. How are they doing being in the house you know, so many hours and trying to deal with the social distance and the distance learning, I'm very concerned for some of my students that I would counsel a lot on a regular basis.
Now, school nurses and teachers have a knack for treating their own students as if they were their own child. But you do have a kid at home, right?
I have two boys, 7 and 11. And, so, yes, and I play multiple roles.
And what precautions are you taking now? Obviously, motherhood is difficult as it is. What precautions are you taking now?
Well, I suffered from COVID back at the end of March. So right now, we're still practicing social distancing. There's really not much to do outside, so we stay home as much as possible. My son plays basketball, so he does go and practice like 3 times out of the week with a small group. So, you know, slowly, I think it's also important to be outside, and we're human beings. We're meant to interact with the environment, but also maintaining precautions.
Wow. Can you tell us about your positive COVID diagnosis?
Well, my story is a little bit crazy because literally when I started having symptoms, I had just closed on a home. I'm in a brand new home for 2 months. I've been living here, but I literally had 4 days to move. So I was literally throwing up, calling patients, and moving all at the same time. And when I decided to go get tested, in my mind, I said, you know what? I don't care what that test result says. I'm pretty sure that this is COVID. So I was sick for about 14 days. I was blessed enough that I was able to manage this at home. And then my husband, of course, because we were around each other while we were trying to move, he ended up getting sick. So we were quarantined for about a month, I would say. My children had to go stay with their grandmother. And we were just taking care of each other, really holding on to those marriage vows. He would give me a hot tea, and I would check his temperature, give him Tylenol. So That was truly an unforgettable experience, for sure.
Children are somewhat disconnected by what's going on, the protests, COVID-19, but your kids had a direct experience with this. How did they respond to the fact that both of their parents were, you know, struck down by COVID?
My oldest one, he, my 11-year-old, of course, he was a bit more worried because he's very aware of what was going on. But one thing about children, they're very resilient, and we always try to keep a positive environment for them. So we would FaceTime on a daily, and so they knew that I was okay. So the resiliency in children is really incredible.
And do you find yourself being resilient as well? Or are you handling your anxiety?
You know what? I say anxiety and fear is normal. Is how we channel that anxiety and fear. I'm not one to dwell in fear and anxiety because I've been through a lot in my life. So I just take that feeling, I acknowledge it, and then I push through. It was very important for me to create a healing environment within my home. I had to get off social media for a while. I'm Christian, so I relied a lot on praise and worship, and just create an environment that was conducive to me getting better and getting through this thing.
We do have a phone call. Juan in West Palm has called 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Juan, thanks for calling in. You're on the radio. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you. I just wanted to get some insight from someone that's in law enforcement and is dealing with this situation from many different aspects. You know, we strive day in and day out to do the right thing, and we also know that we have brothers that are doing the wrong thing as the injustice that was carried out in Minneapolis. So we're caught in a situation where we need to continue to do our job, and at the same time, accept the fact that there's going to be a fallback for the actions of few. But it does make our job much more difficult, but we understand. And in spite of that, our job has always been difficult, but now more than ever with the COVID crisis, with the backlash against law enforcement, it really does affect us on a mental level.
Yeah. And before, Juan, you serve in the law enforcement community?
Yes, I do. Yes, sir.
What role? Do you mind sharing with us?
I won't go into those details. but I'll tell you that I've been in law enforcement for over 18 years.
Okay. And so tell us about what you're experiencing, what you're feeling.
Well, let me start off by saying that what in fact made me go into law enforcement to begin with was 9/11. 9/11 obviously took place in 2001. I went into the academy by the early of 2002, and I was certified law enforcement officer by 2003. Since that time, you know, my saying that I love to say in my line of work is that we get to see the worst in people. We also get to see the best in people. We respond and we're trained to go into difficult situations that many have absolutely nothing to do with it. We accept that role.
Mm-hmm.
We embrace it. It's in a lot of ways, it's a calling for us. It's, you know, just at the same time that many think that law enforcement, you know, people get into law enforcement for the fact to be bullies, it's actually the opposite. We fight for the meek. We fight for the innocent. We fight for those that don't have voice. And even with all that being said, we understand that there's a lot of ignorance, and I can't think of a better word, just like any other type of racism or stereotypes that are out there, a minority or any segment of the population, we know that comes with it. We accept it. We understand that people many times don't understand our role and see us as the enemy. But and there are a few. And just like Chris Rock said, we can't have a few bad apples.
Right.
It's like having a bad pilot, you know. You can't have bad pilots.
Yeah.
And I agree with that wholeheartedly. Is there room for improvement in law enforcement? Without a doubt, 100%. But I explain it this way to others. Just like there are outstanding and very professional departments that run their agencies in a proper manner at the local level, state level, and federal level, there are also departments that, in my opinion, are doing a horrendous job. And those need to be evaluated and addressed immediately. Because at the end of the day, we do have, you know, great power. And, you know, with that comes a great responsibility. But it does take a toll on us today more than ever.
And so, Juan, to that end, just share with us, if you would, what you're doing for yourself to address that toll that you're talking about.
I'll give you an example this weekend. I have a pattern of when I come home from the day, I'd like to detach myself from the day at work. I need, let's say, a certain amount of time to, what I like to say, re-enter the normal world that the civilians get to live. Once I feel myself that I've what I call decompressed from that, I try to involve myself in activities that I like doing, such as working out, you know, spending time with family and so forth, living a normal life, what we like to call it. But this past weekend, I got to say it was more difficult than usual. I did not pretty much leave the house because I had to sit down and reevaluate many things that are happening right now in this country. And it saddens me to see this country being torn apart the way it is with the divisiveness. And I'm trying to think and come up with a plan on an individual level,
mm-hmm.
myself, to see how I could make some change. And I feel that everyone at a small level, because every time I touch someone's life, I hope that it's in a positive way, not in a negative way. So that's what helps me get up again and go out there. And what we like to say is, you know, fight that fight.
Yeah. Juan, I appreciate you calling and sharing your perspective with us from law enforcement. You're in uniform, I take it, Juan?
I can be in uniform, and there are days also I am not in uniform.
Okay. Fair enough. Juan, I appreciate you sharing your perspective. Thank you, Juan. Thank you. 800-743-9576. Connect with us here on this Monday morning, 9 a.m. hour, live as we're talking about kind of how the community is dealing with the anxieties and the worries and the stresses, certainly from the pandemic, but also the historic pain that has resurfaced in a very public way with the protests for racial justice. 800-743-WLRN. We're also streaming live in this 9 a.m. hour on the WLRN Facebook page. You can find us there. Now, we want to remind you, tonight at 10 p.m. on WLRN-TV, we present Race Matters, America in Crisis. The television special takes a close look at the frustration pouring out onto American streets over police brutality. WLRN Connects continues after a quick break. 800-743-9576. We're back on WLRN Connects here on WLRN. I am Tom Hudson, along with my colleague, Wilkin Brutus.
Martini Jean-Baptiste, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, Martini Jean-Baptiste is an ICU nurse at St. Mary's Medical Center in West Palm Beach. ICU on a regular day is a high-stress environment. What has changed for you during this pandemic?
Well, what has changed for me is that, you know, coming into work now, you don't, first of all, we have an isolated unit for our COVID patients. So, you know, the stress of are you going to COVID world is one of the things that we think about. And when we're there, we're totally dressed in our PPE and we're in a mask, gowned up, you know, completely covered for 12 hours. There is no drinking. There is no going to the bathroom when you want to. You have to take, literally have to take a break and completely de-gown so you can go use the bathroom or take a sip of water. So it's intense. You know, our stress level is, again, like you said, in ICU, we're already, you know, at a stressful environment. But with this pandemic, it's definitely intensified.
And the word stress can seem abstract for some people. Can you describe what it's like to put on and take off the gear and any specific guidelines that you have to adhere to?
Oh, so, you know, you have to completely be covered and making sure that you're doing the process correctly because you don't want to cross-contaminate. You don't want to, you know, mess up because you want to make sure that your mask is sealed so you're not being exposed to the virus because, again, you're walking into a unit with patients who are positive for the virus. And so when you're coming out to either take a break or go to lunch, we have to de-gown, and that process, you think the anxiety level is so high because you are thinking about, oh, did I mess up? Did I miss a step? You know, did I, you know, take the glove off first before I took my mask? Did I touch the inside of my mask? Because again, when you go back, you're using that same mask to go back in.
So you're worried about cross-contamination, essentially.
Correct.
How do you dispose your gear when you get home?
So I have a decontaminating process, usually an hour and a half long. I get undressed on my patio, and which my neighbors have clear view. I totally, completely get undressed before I go in the house, take a shower, Lysol, wipe everything off, and then I go pick up my daughter.
Wow. That almost sounds demoralizing just in terms of the lack of privacy there. So you pick up your daughter. Obviously, motherhood is already difficult under any circumstances. What are you doing to alleviate your stress when you go pick up your daughter? Is that like the sort of silver lining after a long shift?
Yeah, it really is. But again, you know, that drive that I take to go pick her up, I start to think about, was I exposed, or, you know, did I come across an instance where I had opened myself to catch the virus, and am I bringing this home to her? So I do think about those things, but then, you know, again, with her seeing her and playing with her and picking her up, you know, those anxieties seem to calm down, but you know, you still have, as a parent, in the back of your mind, your whole thing is to make sure that you keep your kids safe. And, you know, with being exposed to this virus, you know, the potential of bringing it home to her, am I really keeping her safe?
So, Carrie, you're also on the line right now, along with Martini. To end this call, I want to start with you, Carrie. For the rest of us, what can we learn from how to deal with the stress from this pandemic? Obviously, you both are in a field where it's a high-stress environment, but outside of that field, what are some things you can tell the public about how to deal with the stress from this pandemic?
I would say take a deep breath, maintain the precautions, be cautious, but also take mental break, whatever that is for you, if it's a mindfulness session, if it's meditating, whatever brings you peace and holds you still. And that could just be for a few moments a day. So, and to just enjoy your family and go for a walk outside. Like I mentioned before, we're meant to interact with the environment and just be mindful when we're out and about in the public to maintain social distancing, wear your mask, and be mindful where your body is positioned when you're inside the stores. But just really, in the midst of this, all this anxiety and stress, there's beautiful things that have come about. I've spent so much time with my children, and I've learned so many things about them that necessarily I didn't have time before, because I work, I go to school, and we're just on the go and in the normalcy of things. So just really enjoy and hold on to your family and continue to follow the CDC guidelines and those of Florida Department of Health.
Hey, Martini, really quickly, one thing.
Yes. I totally agree. Definitely agree. I am so thankful for my manager and my ICU directors, doctors, actually, and my coworkers and 1199 union members. We support each other like a family. And so whenever we do have those days where we need to talk, we can call each other. And again, spending time with your family, learning new things. I've learned so much about my two-year-old that I didn't know. Because I take time, you know, with a two-year-old, it's constant, you know. So when you're busy, you're like, yeah. But now I have the time to actually watch her grow and see the things that she does, how she's so much like me. And it's rewarding. And I'm spending time, you know, praise and worship and calling your loved ones, actually talking to them and taking the time out to say, I love you. And I'm just thinking of you.
So. Kara Cuellar is a nurse at a middle school in Hialeah, and Martini Jean-Baptiste is an ICU nurse at St. Mary's Medical Center in West Palm Beach. Thank you both.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
Bye. We are connecting here throughout South Florida in this 9 a.m. hour live. We want to hear your stories. How are you dealing with the anxieties brought on by the pandemic and the historic pain that has resurfaced yet again with the issues at the heart of the public protests for racial justice? Chantel is with us in Miami. Chantel, thanks for calling in. You're on the radio.
Yes, hi, good morning, and thank you for this wonderful show. I would like to piggyback on listening to the nurse, the ICU nurse, just listening to her give me anxiety, because, I mean, the process that they have to go through, and I do agree with her. But my question is, teachers are going to be exposed to the same type they're going to have the same kind of exposure. Is that going to be the process where they have to cover themselves up and knowing when to recover, to avoid cross-contamination, the whole thing? It's just disheartening to me to know that we are where we are now. We still don't have enough testing. When we test, we still don't have enough. The results take forever to get there. So as teachers, they're going to go through the same process as this nurse is going through. With that, that's my question. That's my comment.
Yeah, Chantel, I think we just simply don't know yet, Wilkin, right? We don't know a return to school is going to look like for grade schoolers, for middle schoolers, senior high, college. We just don't know. We don't know what the return to work, fully work, is going to look like for office workers who are able to work from home. There's so much uncertainty. And of course, all that uncertainty, it just compounds that anxiety and stress and risk that we all kind of have to try to deal with. The small risks that we take when we go to the grocery store or go to the hardware store or, you know, go for a walk. And then the larger risks of that the pandemic has really brought on and protesters are dealing with as well, right? I mean, not just the issues at heart, but also the public health risks of protesting as they feel strong about having their voice heard in the streets during these demonstrations and marches.
Right. And we're still trying to encapsulate what's going on by using new language, like new normal. Mm-hmm. It's sort of this sort of abstract way of trying to describe this new territory we're entering right now. So a lot of uncertainty in the air.
Yeah, it is. And you can share your anxieties with us. What has you stressed out? 800-743-WLRN. Connecting with South Florida here live in the 9 a.m. hour. Telephone 800-743-9576. And we're streaming live video of Wilkin and I on the WLRN Facebook page.
And welcome back to WLRN Connects. I'm Wilkin Brutus. So many protesters say George Floyd's death was a tipping point in a series of racist and deadly interactions against Black Americans by law enforcement. Activists are using this opportunity to address the economic and health inequities, redlining, food deserts, unaffordable housing, income gaps, the school-to-prison pipeline, and many structural and institutional issues. Devin Lewis Buchanan is a former athlete who recently got his master's degree in clinical social work. He's the founder of Inspire Youth, an organization that brings behavioral health education to marginalized communities in Palm Beach County. Devin, how are you?
Hey, good morning.
Hey, good to hear from you. How has the community you serve been impacted by the issues at the center of the protests?
Wow. So in many layers. I think, you know, just seeing what is taking place and transpiring nationally, you know, it all really has come to a head in regards to the incident, of course, that took place in Minneapolis with the murder of George Floyd. And, you know, that being one issue that, of course, that has kind of been that the visualized representation, right, of what people are seeing that has gotten everyone to this point right now. But I think the underlying issues are the things that we don't see every day that can't be captured on camera, right? So, you know, that you talked about the inequities in education. You talked about, you know, health disparities that we're seeing now with the COVID-19 crisis and how that has affected, you know, marginalized communities of color because of the lack of access. So I think that is some of the things that are underlined, that are going to be addressed, you know, with all the protests. I think a lot of times it's the focus is on only police brutality, but that is also a part of, you know, what people want to see change as far as when we talk about systemic racism and, you know, the policies that help to keep that going.
So to your point, police reform is one solution-based dialogue among many. So there's a lot of athletes who are now outspoken more than ever. You played college football. Are topics surrounding mental health and wellness losing its taboo among athletes?
I would like to say the conversation has come to a good starting place, right? I know there's more athletes now in the professional level that have, you know, taken stances to talk more about, you know, mental health and how, you know, they are affected. And although they are, you know, talented athletes, although they are, you know, publicized and you know, these big, you know, figures in our society, you know, they are also coming to, you know, to a head to say that, hey, I'm human. Like, I experience life just like everyone else. And I think when people like athletes are able to say that, because, again, in our culture, we look at athletes as, sometimes it's like this celebrity status, like these people are inhuman, like they, you know, they can do anything. Like, you know, we see them, they pull out, you know, pull from within. And you know, we all watched that Michael Jordan documentary, and, you know, just getting glimpses of how he talks about, you know, how he's able to just channel everything. We have this perception that is what athletes are possessed with, but also there's a human factor that plays into it. So I think a lot of those conversations have started. And, you know, I like to see it, of course, take center stage in a sense with younger athletes as they are, you know, coming into their own. But I think that conversation is on the brink of something special. So I'm optimistic about it.
And to your point, you mentioned the human factor. You're pretty hands-on in terms of how you deal with young Black men in a community. How do young Black boys and young Black men respond to you as a Black mental health therapist?
I think it's one of those things that is just relatability. I just to be able to see myself and a lot of the young men that I serve, but also for them to see, you know, themselves and the potential that, you know, they can also become something that may be taboo in their society. You know, I had never imagined becoming a therapist. You know, that was something that I had never pictured myself becoming. And then, you know, to be able to be exposed to other, you know, male clinicians, and then also, you know, Black male clinicians, where I kind of was able to see myself in that representation. So I think when young men are able, especially young Black men, are able to see, you know, representation, especially when we're talking about issues such as mental health, and they're able to be able to put, you know, emotions into words, I think that is like one of those things that helps like bridge that gap in a sense to being able to get access to services and even also maybe possibly stepping into a field that they may have never thought or thought possible.
Oh, man. All right, Devin, stay with us. Devin Lewis Buchanan is a mental health therapist and founder of Inspire Youth. Stay with us, Devin.
We got a lot more to come. We'd also want to remind you that tonight at 10 o'clock on WLRN television, Race Matters, America in Crisis will be on the TV. This is a television special that takes a closer look at the frustration pouring out onto American streets over police brutality. That's 10 o'clock tonight on WLRN television. More of your phone calls and conversation about dealing with the stress and anxiety during this time of the pandemic and the historic pain that has resurfaced with the issues at heart of the protests. 800-743-9576. 800-743-WLRN, and streaming live in the 9 a.m. hour on the WLRN Facebook page.
Welcome back to WLRN Connects. I'm Wilkin Brutus. This is part of the song Shoebox Dreams from one of our next guests. Jarrell Brown is a local musician who goes by the name Raylo. He also hosts events for Flavor, which is short for Florida Variety, a media and events group in West Palm Beach. Now, protests across the nation since the killing of George Floyd by a Minneapolis police officer continued for a second weekend in a row. And they continued in areas protesters normally don't march. Here in South Florida, groups of protesters have gathered in Homestead, Coral Springs, and around Sawgrass Mills Shopping Center, demanding social justice and better treatment from police officers and the criminal justice system. People are demanding solution-based dialogue with local and national leaders to address issues that prevent social mobility and justice, and to develop better coping methods.
And that's what we'd like to hear from you, a sounding board. How are you dealing with the stresses of the pandemic and the historic pain that is at the center of the protests over the last 2 weeks since the killing of George Floyd? 800-743-WLRN. That's our telephone numbers. We're live in the 9 a.m. hour, connecting with you at 800-743-9576. And you could also see Wilkin and I on our Facebook page. We're streaming live right there at the WLRN Facebook page.
Raylo joins us now. Hey, Raylo.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you guys doing?
Hey, morning. As a musical artist, how do you cope and find inspiration during the pandemic and protests?
Well, there's so much emotion and anxiety, you know, just going on in my head. I think it's hard to process it well enough to even give you a correct answer. But with everything going on, what I've done is I've kind of just turned inward, you know, spend a lot of time with my family, that kind of thing. You know, that positive energy is, you know, it's keeping me inspired to create, you know?
Now, some artists have had a lot more time on their hands, but do artists feel forced to create during this pandemic?
I do think that there's an unspoken pressure on an artist right now, especially, you know, everyone knows that you're at home. We all know that you should be locked in, tapped in. But it's all about how you deal with it personally. You know what I mean? If you're the type of artist who's moved by, you know, just what your fans want you to do or what the people want you to do, then, you know, you're kind of late. You should already have been creative by now. But for artists like myself with a little more freedom, you know, to express themselves creatively as they wish, I think the only real pressure that I'm feeling is trying to figure out what I can do to affect change, to affect positive change in the times that we're in right now.
Now, Flavor is making that effort now. They're known as an eclectic events organization, but they're trying to do the work now, doing a lot of research to prep for that. And one of those things you guys have done was create Instagram Live discussions with artists in the community. What is a reoccurring thread that you're hearing from artists in terms of how they're coping?
I think the general consensus in that community is that it's really flourishing. You know, artists can be some of the most outspoken and passionate people. So when they're put into a situation where their moral compass is triggered, I think there's like a bittersweet mixture of pain and progress. Like protest versus Pro Tools, you know, we'll get out into the street.
we should probably explain what Pro Tools is. Right. Pro Tools audiophiles, Raylo. Yeah, right, right. Yeah, it's an audio editing program for professionals. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, we'll get out into the street and get our voices heard with the people, and then go home and use our art to speak volumes more than we ever could do just, you know.
Protests and Pro Tools should be the name of your next album. And WLRN demands royalties for giving you that idea, all right? Now, stay with us. We have Anuela Alexander. She's the owner of a green community and environmental conservation organization and is part of Carnal Moon, a healing and wellness group in West Palm Beach. Anuela, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing well this morning. How are you guys?
Hey, doing great. Now, you tend to combine wellness and horticulture. And what are some coping methods that you use to keep yourself grounded?
Yes, wellness and horticulture are big parts of my life and a big part of how I stay, I guess you can say, sane through all of this. I definitely find it very meditative, the taking care of plants and gardening and being surrounded by nature. I always feel that nature is the most grounding thing in our lives. We may not give it the due respect that it deserves, but for me, it definitely kept me happy.
Now you're known in Palm Beach County for you're known as the plant mama. you build gardens at public schools and businesses. Does plants have a mental health, or being surrounded by plants have mental health benefits?
Absolutely. This is definitely a proven fact. I don't know that too many of us actually know that, but it is definitely a proven fact that being surrounded by the color green and living things, plants, not only do they, you know, clean the air in your home, but they are proven to make you feel so much better, and they absolutely can improve your mental health.
Now, Carnal Moon is a collective of Black women and Afro-Latinx. What are you doing as a group to deal with this overwhelming amount of collective anxiety surrounding not just the protests, but the pandemic as well, which it seems as though a lot of people have almost forgotten about the pandemic at this point, but it's still very relevant. How are you as a group handling that?
So that is definitely a very tactical question. We are doing a lot. We have definitely, since the whole pandemic, we've taken our social media just up a few notches to get the people the resources that they depend on us for, and to make sure that we're holding healing, safe spaces for people to process their emotions and, you know, to just come together as a community. You know, that's what we're here for. That's our mission statement. So we really wanted to make sure that we were here for the community during these times. We've created a resource directory for the Black community, and it's on our Instagram page. You know, the link is in the bio. You can find everything that we've worked on to provide to the people right on there. We held Zoom meetings so that the community can come and just kind of be together. We have meetings all the time talking about what we can do to improve stuff. We hold live talk series with different people doing amazing things to keep the collective inspired, and especially through the pandemic where people were just, you know, losing their jobs left and right, and all they had were their homes. They were just homebound for so long. And I know that that can really throw people into a depression. We definitely put up some coping skills up there. My personal favorite was the one to stay grounded, you know, the mindfulness practices. So I think we've just been, whatever we can get our hands on that we think the community needs to hear, or whatever we come up with, we just put it out there so that they have access to it.
Hmm.
It's definitely needed.
All right. So Raylo, a musician and member of Flavor and Anuela, owner of A Green Community and member of Carna Moon. You both please stay with us.
And Devin Lewis Buchanan with Inspire Youths is with us. He will return here. More of your phone calls, 800-743-WLRN. You know wealth is of the mind and not the pocket. A wealthy man would invest in his time and not his watches. I've been grinding silent, trying to be the plug, not the socket. So I
welcome back to WLRN Connects. I am Wilkin Brutus. This is a song called Jazz from one of our guests. Jarrell Brown is a local musician who goes by the name Raylo. He also hosts events for Flavor, short for Florida Variety, a media and events group in West Palm Beach.
Today we're talking about handling anxiety from the pandemic and the historic mental health issues brought forth by the protests for social justice that we've seen for the last couple of weeks here across South Florida and really across the nation. Taliba is with us from Miami on line 5. Taliba, thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I would like to share just a story from 1946 to the current as far as a black woman is concerned. And that is, I am seeing the same thing happen over and over, meetings and more meetings, and the real root of the problem is never getting taken care of. And that is for people to be educated and really dig into the idea that racism comes from the idea that we are different races and one race is superior or inferior to another. If we can dig into that and know that we are all of the human race, the construct of racism is totally something that was designed to create just the kind of environment that we have. So for the 1960s, I remember all of the civil rights movements, and the 1970s to 80s, I remember the influx of people other than black people migrating to the United States. Some of them had it really easy getting here, and some of them had it really rough getting here. And basically, it was a matter of color, not a matter of people and persons. So in 1980, I am here in Miami as a direct result of what I'll call the McDuffie uprising, not a riot, but the uprising. My husband was dispatched from the Department of Justice to try to get reform in police departments. Well, we're still trying to get reform in the police departments.
And what does reform look like to you?
Reform looks like to me, it's got to start with getting the people who are policing to understand that they are to protect and serve people and not things. And when I think this happens, it's going to be a matter of reform from the community, because the police departments come from the community, and understanding what it is to experience being discriminated against overtly or covertly because of your race. And until that kind of understanding is deeply ingrained in our psyche, I don't think we have a workable police reform.
Great insight, Taliba. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate that.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
I enjoy the show all the time.
Thank you.
You know, Wilkin, she began her comment in a really interesting way that you and I have spoken about in planning for this program, which is that educational deficit, the information gap. Mm-hmm. and Devin Lewis Buchanan with Inspire Youths. You work with young Black youths in Palm Beach County and elsewhere. How do you hear Taliba and her historic analysis and historic firsthand experience talking about what's happened in decades past and this educational inequity, the gap that can feed into racist thought and racism?
Well, I think that having someone who is able to speak from not only their personal experience that she was able to just share with us, I think that's a lot of the disconnect is between generations. And so what I see right now and what is happening currently with, you know, most of the protests that I've seen has been led by a younger generation. Like, these are young people with not having the opportunity to be in those rooms or at the table for decision making. So they have to use their energy. They have to use, you know, some of their anger, their outrage. They have to use, you know, their compassion to lead them in a lot of what's going on now with the protests and as she calls the uprising. I think that's a beautiful way to place it, because what they are leading and what they are using their voice for is to change, you know, what's going on. So I think, you know, her sharing that and understanding a lot of where, you know, because there's going to be backlash no matter what stance that you take. You know, if you stay silent, if you protest, if you talk about it on social media, no matter what outlet you choose to try to channel and change something, there's going to be backlash. So, you know, I'm thankful that we have elders who are able to, you know, recap of the past and really show, you know, the different ways of which, you know, these things can actually change.
Yeah, you and Taliba make a great point. There is, in order to have solution-based dialogue, there needs to be a clear and concerted understanding about the multi-ethnic, multi-generational Black community, which consists of wealthy and distressed members who are trying to address health disparities, high maternal mortality rates among Black women, racial gerrymandering, unconscious bias in police departments, over-policing in poor neighborhoods. There's a complexity in the way in which we describe the quote-unquote Black community. Haitian Americans in Miami is very different from Black Muslims in North Philadelphia, for example. Atlanta is very different from Ferguson, Missouri, or Minneapolis. So local politics seems to be the way to go to address some of these issues. We still have Raylo and Anuela on the line here. I have a question. I'll go with Anuela first. Do you think there is enough attention spent on policies that directly address trauma and mental health?
You know, I don't really think so. And it really shows in certain communities that I've been privileged to work with. It shows with the children, it shows with their parents, and it shows with the generations that came before them. And it's really, it's just a really disheartening thing, because these communities have needed it for so long. I actually had a conversation about this yesterday with a friend of mine, you know, and she comes from a more privileged background. And we were talking about, you know, white privilege and therapy and having access, and how we just don't have the same access to a lot of things that should just be human access, you know, things that humans need access to. You have one group that has just very privileged access to these things, and another that barely even know they exist. So the answer is no.
I want to thank our guests. Anuela Alexander is the owner of A Green Community, an environmental conservation organization in Palm Beach County. Jarrell Brown, a local musician who goes by the name Raylo. He also hosts events for Flavor, a media and events group in West Palm Beach. And Devin Lewis Buchanan is the founder of Inspire Youths, an organization that brings behavioral health education to marginalized communities in Palm Beach County. I'm Wilkin Brutus.
Peter Meritz is our technical director. Polly Landis, our booking producer. Denise Royal helps with producing and answers the phones. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.